24. Tomorrow, sunshine, scattered clouds, a chance of rain, 90 degrees the high. Right now, it's 86.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, Medical Director and Physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. How did a small New York company save the elephant? Now give yourself a couple of seconds to ponder this question. In the meantime, I'll tell you that a printer by the name of John Wesley Hyatt was encouraged to develop a new substance when he saw an ad by billiard ball maker Phelan and Callender offering $10,000 to the person who invented a usable substitute for ivory in billiard balls. And although there's no mention about Hyatt's ever receiving the $10,000, he eventually patented his invention and set up his own manufacturing company, which later became the Albany Billiard Ball Company.
But the story of celluloid doesn't end there. Only its relationship to elephant does. You see, celluloid could only be used in certain applications because of its flammability.
For example, it never caught on in billiard parlors because the celluloid-coated balls would sometimes produce small explosions when they collided with each other. It was also used as the coating in movie films. You've probably heard the term celluloid. Well, it sparked countless fires in hot projection rooms.
The problem was the nitro part of nitrocellulose, which prompted inventors to find alternatives.
Then a scientist named Henry Dreyfus created what he called the safety film in 1900 by mixing cellulose with acetic acid instead of the more volatile nitric variety. Just 7 years later, Leo Bakelant created the first fully synthetic plastic, which he called Bakelite.
So, how does all of these relate to medicine?
Nothing that I can really see. However, it does show how one small discovery can lead to other bigger discoveries, not just in the billiard field, but in healthcare and medicine as well.
Do you remember one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind?
It doesn't matter that Neil Armstrong, who died at the age of 82 in 2012, and said what he actually said was, "One small step for a man, one giant step for mankind." The only difference was that little word, that makes a big difference, at least semantically, because without it, man abstractly represents all of humanity, just like mankind. Thus, the quote is essentially, "That's one small step for mankind, one giant leap for mankind," not what he presumably wanted to say to the world.
So again, one tiny thing can change men's understanding for decades or even century afterwards.
Misunderstandings can change history. Heidi Grant Halverson wrote a book titled No One Understands You and What to Do About It. It's quite interesting and well written, and I'd recommend it to anyone interested in the subject that the name implies.
Anyway, the author tells a story about her friend Tim, who started a new job as a manager, with one of his top priorities being communicating to his team.
In one meeting, he told each team member that he valued each's input. So at team meetings, as each member spoke up about whatever project they were working on, Tim made sure he put on his active listening face so as to signal that he cared about what each person was saying.
But after meeting with him a few times, Tim's team got a very different message from the ones he intended to send.
After a few weeks of meetings, one team member finally asked Tim if he was angry with the team members. Tim explained that he wasn't at all angry, that he was just putting on his active listening face. To that, his colleague gently explained that his active listening face looked a lot like his angry face.
According to the book's author, Tim's story captures one of the primary problems of being a human being. Try as you might to come across in a certain way to others. People often perceive you in an altogether different way.
One person may think, for example, that by offering help to a colleague, she's coming across as generous.
But her colleague may interpret her offer as a lack of faith in his abilities.
So just as he misunderstands her, she misunderstands him. Now think back to many of your own contacts with others, whether they're colleagues, bosses, or even family members.
A similar misunderstanding occurred when a boss offered an employee help when she noted that the employee had been showing up early and going home late every day.
Unfortunately, the boss was reading the employee's actions incorrectly, as the employee kept those strange hours simply because he, well, worked best when the office was less crowded. I immediately thought of the saying by Oscar Wilde who said, "When you assume, you make an ass out of you and me."
These kinds of misunderstandings lead to conflict and resentment, not just at work, but at home too.
And sometimes in the grand scale, to wars.
How many fights between couples have started with one person misinterpreting what another says and does?
For example, she goes to bed early rather than watching their favorite television show together like they usually do. And he, well, he assumes she's not interested in spending time with him when really she's just exhausted after a tough day at work. Before we continue with what the book says, I remember a study that was done years ago by showing pictures of people's faces with different emotions portrayed. For example, a happy face, a mad face, maybe a sad face, a pensive face, etc., etc. These were shown to a number of different groups by age.
It is interesting that teenagers very often inappropriately looked at a questioning facial expression and marked that as a mad face. As people got older, they were more likely to get the expression correct.
Maybe this is one reason why our teenage children often misunderstand our intentions when we try to talk with them.
Getting back to the book, Halvorsen says people very often do not realize that they are not coming across the way they think they are.
As an example, suppose someone asks you to describe how you see yourself. In other words, what traits would you say describe you best? And then I ask someone who knows you well to list your traits. The correlation between what you say and what your friend says will be somewhere between 0.2 and 0.5. There's a big gap between how other people see us and how we see ourselves. Again, according to the author, this gap arises from some quirks of human psychology.
First of all, most people suffer from something called the transparency illusion. This is the belief that what they feel, desire, and intend is crystal clear to others, even though they have done very little to communicate clearly what is going on inside their minds.
Because they assume what they're saying is crystal clear to the listener, they might not spend the time or effort to be as clear and forthcoming about their intentions or emotional states as they could be, giving the perceiver very little information with which to make an accurate judgment.
Chances are, therefore, that how you look when you are slightly frustrated isn't all that different from how you look when you are a little concerned, confused, disappointed, or nervous.
Your, well, I'm kind of hurt by what you just said face probably looks an awful like your, I'm not at all hurt by what you said face.
And the majority of times that you have said to yourself, I made my intentions clear. Or he knows what I meant. You didn't, and he doesn't.
It's time for our mid-show break, so Carmen and I will be back in just a moment. This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. According to Daniel Kahneman, a Nobel Prize winner, there are two ways that the mind processes information, including information about others. Well, naturally, the two systems are called System 1 and System 2.
System 1 processes information quickly, intuitively, and automatically. System 1 is at work. For example, when individuals engage in effortless thinking, like when they do simple math problems like 3 plus 3 equals 6, or when they drive on familiar roads as they talk to a friend in the car, or even when they see someone smile and immediately know that that person is happy.
When it comes to social perception, System 1 uses shortcuts to come to conclusions about another person.
There are many shortcuts the mind relies on when it reads others' facial expressions, body language, and intentions. And one of the most powerful ones is called the primacy effect, and it explains why first impressions are so important.
Here, information that one person learns about another in his early encounters with that person powerfully determines how he will see that person ever after.
It is therefore interesting to note that children who perform better on the first half of a math test and worse on the second half might be judged to be smarter than those who perform less well on the first part of the test but better on the second part.
The two students would have performed objectively the same, but one would benefit from the way the primacy effect biases the mind. There are a lot of terrifying implications of findings like these for late bloomers, or anyone who struggles initially only to excel later. So let's go on to System 2. Here, we process information in a conscious, rational, and deliberate manner.
System 2, for example, is at work when an individual does more complicated math problems like algebra, when he is driving on foreign roads, or when he is trying to figure out what his supervisor meant when he left a cryptic note on his desk saying, "Call me immediately."
Something like that can send chills up your spine. Unlike System 1, where thinking is automatic and effortless, System 2 thinking, it takes effort. The important point about System 2 is that it can correct System 1 by evaluating the situation more carefully.
Unfortunately, System 2 demands a lot of effort and mental energy, and people have to be really motivated to engage in System 2 thinking.
Because most people are cognitive misers, content to trade off speed for accuracy in thinking about others, perception usually ends with System 1. These two systems of reasoning lead individuals to perceive others in two distinct stages. First comes the fast but flawed stage, and a reflective and deliberate stage comes next.
One excellent study of all of this was done by psychologist Dan Gilbert of Harvard University. First participants were shown 7 silent video clips with subtitles of a woman speaking to a stranger.
In 5 of the clips, the woman appeared to be stressed out and anxious, with the subtitles explaining what the woman was talking about.
In one condition, participants were told that the woman and stranger were talking about neutral topics for all 7 clips, like restaurants and books.
On the other hand, in the other condition, participants were told that in the 5 clips in which the woman appeared anxious, she was talking to the strangers about touchy subjects like sexual fantasies, personal secrets, and life's failures. Then some of the participants were asked to attempt to memorize the discussion topics that appeared in the subtitles with the actual object of keeping the participants mentally busy so that they could not enter the second phase of perception.
At the end of the experiment, the participants were asked whether or not this woman was an anxious person.
When the participants were not distracted by the memorization task, they rated her in an expected way. They thought she was anxious when she was discussing neutral topics and acted stressed out. And they rated her as not anxious when she was discussing stressful topics and acting stressed out.
These research subjects were able to enter the second phase of perception by taking the woman's situation into account.
In other words, anyone asked about her sexual fantasies would likely feel uncomfortable. But, and here's the big but, those who were kept mentally busy came to a very different conclusion about this woman's personality.
Regardless of what situation she was in, they concluded that she was indeed an anxious person. For these people, acting anxious equaled being anxious.
Of course, perception is also clouded by the perceiver's own experiences, their emotions and biases, which also contributes to misunderstandings between people.
It seems that everyone has an agenda when they interact with another person. That agenda is usually trying to determine one of 3 pieces of information about the perceived.
First, is this person trustworthy? Next, is this person useful to me? And finally, does this person threaten my self-esteem?
How a perceiver answers those questions will determine whether she judges the other person in a positive or negative way.
Take self-esteem. Individuals need to maintain a positive sense of themselves to function well. When someone's sense of herself is threatened, like when she interacts with someone who she thinks is better than her at a job that they both share, she judges that person more harshly.
One study actually found that an attractive job applicant was often judged as less qualified by members of the same sex than by members of the opposite sex.
The raters who were members of the same sex felt a threat to their self-esteem by the attractive job applicants, while the members of the opposite sex felt no threat to their self-esteem.
So what can we do to overcome the many obstacles to accurate perception?
To answer that, let me tell you about another study. Here, each person chose a specific goal for the negotiation, like gain the liking of the other person or hold firm to my own personal opinions, which they went into the negotiation trying to achieve, but weren't necessarily trying to reveal to the other person.
After the negotiation, each party was asked what the other person's goal was, which was an indication of how transparent the other person was.
In the study, amazingly, or maybe not so amazingly, the test subjects guessed the goal of their partner correctly only 26% of the time, just a tad over a quarter of the time.
Meanwhile, more than half of them thought that they were clearly relaying their goals and intentions to the other person.
The lesson of this study is that people may think that they're being clear, but they're not. So the answer to the question, what can we do to overcome the many obstacles to accurate perception, is that it is way better for you to decide to be a good sender of signals rather than to hope that the perceiver is going to go into phase 2 of perception.
It's not realistic to expect people to go to that effort. Can you imagine how exhausting it would be to weigh every possible motivation of another person?
Plus, you simply can't control what's going on inside of another person's mind, but you can control how you come across. People who are easy to judge, in other words, people who send clear signals to others, are ultimately happier and more satisfied with their relationships, their careers, and their lives than those who are more difficult to read.
Feeling understood is a basic human need. When people satisfy that need, they feel more at peace with themselves and with the people around them. who see them closer to how they see themselves.
So, the next time you're surprised by someone's reaction to something that you said or did, try to see if you really imparted your feeling to them correctly. They may only be using System 1 to understand the real meaning in your words and actions. I hope that you all understood what Carmen and I just talked about. If not, feel free to send us an email at livelonger@gmail.com or just read the book by Heidi Grant Halverson that's titled No One Understands You and What to Do About It.
Still on a psychological kick, here on Hey Doc, researchers found that idle small talk is not necessarily negatively related to well-being, contrary to previous findings.
It seems that a study done in 2010 suggested that more meaningful conversations were linked to greater happiness, while more small talk was linked to unhappiness.
A new study with a much larger study group did still show that quality conversations are linked to greater happiness. What is significant is that small talk seems to have no relationship with happiness one way or the other.
And it also found that no matter if you are an introvert or an extrovert, the results were pretty much the same. The new study participants included college students, breast cancer survivors and their partners, recently divorced adults, and healthy adults participating in a meditation intervention.
Upon waking until bedtime, participants in each study wore what is called the EAR, or electronically activated recording device, which is said to turn on intermittently for short periods of time throughout the day to capture candid moments of daily interaction.
The research team coded the conversations recorded by the EAR to determine whether they were substantive. First, they had to define their terms. Small talk, it was defined as a conversation where the two conversation partners walk away still knowing pretty much as much as they did or as little as they did about each other as before and nothing else. In substantive conversation, there is real, meaningful information exchanged.
Importantly, it could be about any topic, politics, relationships, the weather. It just needs to be at a more than trivial level of depth.
Study participants also completed surveys designed to measure their life satisfaction as well as assess their personality.
Overall, study participants who engaged in a greater number of substantive conversations were happier, regardless of whether they had more introverted or extroverted personalities.
The researchers expected that personality might make a difference. Here's where it was thought that extroverts might benefit more from social interactions than introverts, or that substantive conversations might be more closely linked to well-being for introverts than for extroverts. But the researchers were very surprised that this does not seem to be the case. One result was that it showed that people who spent a lot of time alone are less satisfied with their lives and have lower well-being, and people who spend more time interacting and have more meaningful, substantive conversations are more satisfied. The happy life is social rather than solitary, and meaningfully so.
Although small talk didn't have any direct link to participants' well-being, it may still be important in that it can help lay the groundwork for more substantive conversations.
While the study establishes a link between substantive conversations and happiness, it's hard to say whether having more substantive conversations actually makes people happier, or if happier people just have more substantive conversations.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com. where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com.
Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.